John Hovind joins us now. He's a host at Sirius XM NHL Radio and the Kings of the Podcast to talk about some NHL news. John, thanks very much for being with us. And let's start with Lake Tahoe today. A great idea and just bad luck with the ice and whatever happened here, John. But the NHL certainly did not like the developments today, what happened at their marquee event.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's kind of ironic when you see all the snowstorms that are happening around North America, and you know, we certainly hope that everybody is safe, but ironic that there's all this snow going on in this winter weather, and it was the sun that really caused a problem for the NHL today. But they'll get the game off later tonight, a little bit later than most people expected, like you said, midnight Eastern. But let's get the game in, and then let's see how many Flyers players are available for the game tomorrow, because they're certainly shorthanded.
Yeah, that's a tough element there, and that game postponed back until 7 o'clock as well. Let's talk about the reasons that so many teams are shorthanded with players, because like the NBA and Major League Baseball, any of the leagues that have tried to do the travel schedules, there have been some COVID cases. Not an incredibly large number, but enough to kind of, you know, disrupt the schedule. John, how do you think the NHL has been handling this? And is this something that has almost got to be considered now par for the course if you're going to play during a pandemic?
Yeah, first of all, I think it's really hard to criticize the league for anything that they've done, you know, up until this point. Whether you go back to last year, Roger, and we talked a lot about it during the summer, being able to pull off the bubble and get the playoffs in and then get the cup awarded last year, that was a phenomenal effort by the league. And, you know, I just don't think most people realize all the work that goes on behind the scenes. It's not just about the work of Gary Bettman or you know, a board of directors or anything like that. I mean, you talk about trainers and staff and so many people and the coordination, just making copies. I mean, you know, stuff like that to get the papers to everybody is important. And so there's a lot of coordination that goes on to getting an NHL game done in a regular time period. And now you add all of these extra, you know, protocols and rules. And heck, this second round of protocols that's come along here recently has put not only the players pretty much on lockdown, but their families as well and the people that they live with. So it's a very difficult situation, not just for the players on the ice, but for everybody involved with the organization and you know, who they live with at home. And it's all really for our entertainment, so that we can watch the games and try to have a diversion for 3 hours a day or more, depending how many games you watch, you know, to everything that's going on in the real world.
Well, no question. It is a great diversion, and I think people do appreciate the efforts in being done. And so far, well, though some teams have missed games, like I said, it has ended. So did baseball, so did NBA. It's all part and course of doing this. So today, a milestone day for Sidney Crosby, 1,000th game in the NHL against the Islanders. I guess the only question with him, John, is where he's going to rank among the greatest players of all time when all is said and done. And on the occasion of his 1,000th game, maybe just time to reflect on what a remarkable career he's had. And when you consider, you know, the concussion battles that he had to go through to get to that 1,000 game mark as well, it's like we've almost forgot about them.
Yeah, it's true. You know, it's kind of like every year that goes by, people tend to forget about some of the injuries that Wayne Gretzky dealt with as well. I mean, even when they went to the Stanley Cup final in 93, the magical run with the LA Kings, he missed the first half of the season that year with injuries. So it does happen. The longer that you play, the more likely you are to miss some games, you know, due to injury. And with Sid, injuries have been part of the story. But, you know, I think the biggest thing that I think about when somebody talks about Sidney Crosby, there would be really two things. One is his ability to elevate on the big stage, in the biggest games. And we always see that with the great ones. But he just seems to do it more often than most players. He always seems to rise to the occasion when needed in those big moments, whether it's with the Penguins or even with Team Canada on the Olympic stage and things like that. And then the second thing would just be that when you talk to people that have been in and around or played with Crosby or coached him, the same thing always comes out, which is that he finds weaknesses in his game and he works on that. And perhaps that's just timely for me here, being in Los Angeles with all of the young players and the rebuild that's going on with the Kings. And, you know, you hear about things that guys need to work on, but it's just a natural tendency that, you know, players, regardless of their age and their experience and what country they came from, when they're in practice, the majority of them, it's just second nature to do the things that you're good at. You know, it's an ego stroke, number one, and it builds confidence, number two. But when you look at a guy like Sidney Crosby, he takes the exact opposite approach. He's very rare in that sense. He finds something that's not working in his game, and that's what he devotes, you know, his time, energy, and effort into.
No doubt. And ultimately, one of the finest players that has ever played the game and overcame a lot of those injuries as well. And your point about Gretzky is well taken, too. It's a serious back injury, and a lot of people thought it might be career-threatening at that time, and nobody even remembers it now. It shows you the great ones do play through difficult times. What about the Penguins as an entity, though? You know, they make the changes, Hextall and Burke going there now to, you know, try to keep the franchise going with Rutherford out of the mix in Pittsburgh. And yes, any team that has Crosby and Malkin always has to be in a win-now mode. But you really do got to wonder what the shelf life is of the Pittsburgh Penguins and how long they can continue, you know, to do this without trading Malkin. They never trade Crosby, but without making a deal of a significant player. Because you look at them, John, and some nights you think, yeah, there's still enough there. And other nights, maybe you stop and think the best due date is getting pretty close.
Look, let me say this as many times as I can. I'm not trying to draw a comparison in the talent levels when I talk about Anje Kopitar, Jonathan Quick, and Drew Doughty and compare them to Crosby, Malkin, and Letang and those guys. That's for a different debate for a different show. But I think it is interesting because the way you served up the question, what it reminded me of, Raj, was there was a time period after 2014, 2015, where in Los Angeles, the prevailing thought was, hey, as long as Kopitar, Doughty, and Quick are on this team, the Kings are in win-now mode. And that ultimately cost Dean Lombardi, the general manager, his job. There were some questionable trades for Sequeira and for Milan Lucic and some other deals that eventually it proved that, no, that they can't win with this roster, and there needed to be some turnover. And that's what they're going through. And I'm not really sure what the future direction is going to be of the Pittsburgh Penguins, because you have almost two polar opposites in that leadership group right now. You do have more of that win now, wheeler, dealer, trader mode of Brian Burke, and then you have the slow and steady hand of Ron Hextall and the wonderful job that he did in rebuilding the Philadelphia Flyers. So, you know, we've heard Malkin trade rumors now, it feels like, for 10 years. And so if and when they do actually pull the trigger and move him out of Pittsburgh, I would find it a little bit surprising. But, you know, they seem to need to shore up their goaltending. And then if you can do that, then you wonder if maybe they can find a way to maybe get one more, maybe not a cup run, but one more extended, at least run of a season here out of this particular group. But there certainly are going to be some changes, because you don't go out and hire Brian Burke and Ron Hextall just to babysit things exactly as they are right now. So I expect a lot of changes to come here over not only the next 30 days leading into the trade deadline, but over the summer as well prior to next season.
John Hovind is with us from SiriusXM NHL Radio. I'm Roger Lajoie, Sportsnet. Tonight, Leafs up on Montreal 4-2, 3 minutes gone in the third period. Postgame coverage coming up shortly on Leaf Nation. Postgame with Gord Stellick and Nick Alberga. Look around the NHL, John. We'll save the Canadian division for last. Let's stay in the East, because I mentioned Pittsburgh, and they're trying to stay competitive. As we sit tonight, they are currently in fifth place out of a playoff spot, and so are the New York Rangers. Shows you the competitiveness of that division. But there's the Boston Bruins. Zdeno Chara did not go back to the Bruins, but the Bruins just don't seem to miss a beat. They are 10-3-2, 22 points, ticking along nicely. Talk about them and the fact that, you know, we look at teams now who have been consistently at the top of the NHL standings for a long period of time. It's pretty hard to match the record of the Boston Bruins in the last half decade to decade.
Yeah, well, first off, you mentioned Nick Alberga. Let's give a shout out to the Golden Muzzy. He'll be coming up afterwards. So longtime friend of Nick, and look forward to hearing what he has to say after, you know, another stout performance by the Leafs. But in terms of the Bruins, they do just quietly go about their business and get things done. And they are active every year at the trade deadline, and they're adding little pieces and tweaking here and tweaking there. And, you know, whether it's adding Charlie Coyle or doing different things, obviously lost a significant piece on the blue line, over the summer, or whatever month it was at this point, because they all run together here over the last 12 or 15 months. But the Bruins, definitely. I mean, you go back to when they won the Stanley Cup, and just since that point in time, although Chara was the constant, they were tweaking that roster and trying to inject youth. And that's the difficult balance, is finding the time of when it's appropriate to sort of trade or part ways with your players that you become attached to because they help you win or helped you win or helped you find some success, and what's the right time to move them out, and were you able to find something comparable either in the short run or that has the potential on the upside down the road a year or two later to be able to replace those missing pieces. So they seem to have a lot of confidence in that core group. And I still find it rather surprising that Chara didn't finish his career there. You know, there are very few players at this point that get to finish their entire career with one team in the NHL. And you know, he obviously wasn't an original, but he was there for a long period of time. But just surprising that he didn't get the opportunity to finish his career out there. And unfortunate, I think, the way that things sort of unfolded.
Yeah, it was an awkward departure. There's no question about that. But good luck to him in Washington. Another good team there, and obviously very popular with his teammates. We talk about consistency and winning year to year, and I mentioned that with Boston. The Vegas Golden Knights have only been around 4 years, but all 4 years, they've just been darn good. Right from their first year when they went to the Stanley Cup Final, consistently near the top of the standings, 10-3-1 to start this season, and in great shape, right behind the St. Louis Blues. What about Vegas, and what have they been able to do? And even though, you know, it hasn't been perfect, they've had a coaching change, they've had multiple personnel changes, when you think about it, significant changes, but they've always found a way to win hockey games, John.
Well, I do believe that they're a little bit of a beneficiary of weakness. They sort of came along at the right time, where, you know, they used to call it the death triangle here in California, excuse me, with teams just hated coming to play the Sharks, the Kings, and the Ducks when all three of those teams were operating at, you know, at sort of peak efficiency, and they certainly have fallen off at a time when Vegas came into the league, and so they were able to reap some of the rewards. And I don't say that to take anything away from what they've been able to accomplish, but you know, that is a factor. It has played into some of their success. Another big component to their success is their ownership group. And, you know, here in the States, it's not a Jerry Jones with the Dallas Cowboys type situation where, you know, Bill Foley is not out in front and isn't the face of the franchise, but he certainly loves new shiny toys, and every free agent that's available, he's going to chase. Every big name that's available at the trade deadline, he's going to want his general manager to go out and do that. And so they have a lot of resources. They have a lot of interest in keeping the momentum going. It has been a little bit fascinating because in the Las Vegas market, they were the first professional sports team. So they captured the heart of that Vegas market. And anybody who's been there and watched a game, it's just amazing. Whether you're going to a gas station to fill up or whether you're going to a restaurant or a bar, everybody everywhere is talking about the Vegas Golden Knights. And then lo and behold, the Las Vegas Raiders move in and they start to steal some of the pub and some of the headline. I think Vegas, again, they've been a little bit fortunate that the Raiders haven't been good per se. And if the Raiders get back on their winning way, how much of the attention and the spotlight will they steal away from that team? It's going to be an interesting thing to watch. And now they have a farm team there as well, just to end out.
Yeah, Henderson.
They have and the Henderson Silver Knights, which are, you know, really located right there in the Vegas Valley. And so they're able to keep a close eye on the prospects as they start to stock that farm team. And Peyton Krebs is there now, and, you know, they have some other players. So it'll be interesting to watch the development of Henderson in the AHL and how that ultimately feeds up into their future NHL success.
St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup a couple of seasons ago and have been pretty good again so far this year. Like a lot of teams, not as good as home as they are on the road. I think that's a factor of just having no fans in the stands, and maybe there is no home ice advantage anywhere. But the Blues certainly look like are going to be a team and to be a major handful the rest of the way. Where do you rank them in the Western Conference, do you think?
Well, I think there's three teams in the West that have pretty much already secured their spot in the playoffs, and that would be, I'm sorry, I was distracted temporarily. The Gabe Vilardi just scored for the Kings to take a 3-2 lead up in Arizona. But look, they're one of the three teams that have already secured a playoff spot in the Western Division, along with Vegas and along with Colorado. And St. Louis, to me, is an interesting team because for all the talk and for all the hype and for all the analytics people that want to talk about the new NHL, St. Louis, in my mind, is still doing it the old school way. And these Arizona Coyotes that I just mentioned, in my mind, are almost like a lighter version, a junior version of that St. Louis Blues team. So this is a group that I think they're built for playoff hockey. I'm not worried about if the St. Louis Blues finish at the top of the Western Division. I think they're built for that grind of a seven-game series. they are going to have to find their way. You know, they lost their big piece out on the blue line. We talked about the Bruins, but, you know, when you lose Pietrangelo, who was such an integral part of the success of that team for so long, there's an adjustment period. There's that feeling in the room where everybody tries to sort out, okay, that big guy's gone. Now who takes over? And it doesn't get sorted out in training camp. I think it takes 10, 15, 20 games into the season. So I do think the second half of the year, the Blues here are going to look like a little bit of a different team compared to what we've seen so far. And I just want to comment real quickly, Raj, on what you said about the home ice. I think one thing that people are forgetting this year with the way the schedule is set up, the second game is really the more interesting game of the two-game series. And that's because in a normal year, coaches and players are getting their pre-scout. They're getting their information. They're going in. They're playing that game. And then when that game is over, they put it behind them and they move on to the next game. That's not the case here in these little two-game series. So what happens when you go into the second game, you're no longer doing the pre-scout and worrying about your opponent like you are before game one. When you're going into game two, now you're worried about your game and making adjustments so you can spend more time fixing your team than worrying about the other team. And that's why I think we're seeing a much different game in most of the second games in these two-game series.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think from the road perspective, too, the road team is not traveling. They're staying in the city, playing back-to-back games. We never see that, and we've seen it this year, and I think that's a big reason that maybe the home teams don't have the big advantage. It's the rest and travel factor is equal in that second game as opposed to the first game when they first get into town. So interesting time during COVID for sure. You mentioned the Kings up 3-2 on the Oats tonight, trying to make it four wins in a row. Obviously, the Kings have got some good things going lately.
Yeah, look, this is a team that, you know, if you look from the outside, you probably aren't as familiar with really what's going on, but they could have a much, much better record than what they have right now. They had leads going into the third period of the first couple games of the season. They blew those leads late to the Minnesota Wild. And it was just, it's a team it's a new group. And a lot of people came in with high expectations this year for the LA Kings based upon the final 10 or 12 games of last year where they really were on a roll. But any sort of momentum that you get at the end of one season, very rarely does it carry over to the following season. And it certainly is not going to carry over 10 months later. So new faces, new people, a lot of young players. At one point, they had four defensemen in their starting lineup that each had less than 20 games of NHL experience. That's unbelievable. And the Kings haven't done something like that since 1991, back when Rob Blake was first breaking into the league with Daryl Sador and Zhitnik and whatnot. So they're trying to figure out the goaltending. Todd McClellan will tell you they have two number ones. The statistics will tell you that Cal Peterson's, for the most part, outplaying Jonathan Quick. So there's a lot going on there. And Gabe Vilardi, their number one draft pick from 2017, who scored here tonight, is, you know, breaking into the NHL and finding out what all young players find out, and that is that it doesn't matter the success that you had as a junior player. It doesn't matter the success that you have in the American Hockey League. There is not another league in the world that is as difficult to win in as the NHL. It's bigger, stronger, faster, and he's finding out firsthand.
No doubt he is. So that's good news. The Kings are on their way at least a little bit. Central Division is interesting because while teams like Columbus, Dallas, although Dallas has only played 12 games because of the COVID situation, and Nashville, maybe the biggest disappointment in the NHL this year, on the outside looking in their playoff picture. Tampa Bay is having an excellent season. They've also had COVID situation with their schedule, but they're 10-3-1, defending Stanley Cup champions. Gotcha. But Florida, Carolina, and Chicago are really having excellent seasons. John, should we be surprised that in this now almost the third point of the season, the teams like the Florida Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes have the fewest regulation losses in the league?
Well, and when it comes to Florida, you've been waiting for years for them to finally put it all together. They have assembled a lot of young talent, obviously a very good coach in Joel Quenneville, tongue-tied there, but they just needed to put it all together. At the same time, you know, Carolina, they're sneaky good. They're a team that a lot of people outside of that market probably don't pay a lot of attention to. They're one of the last remaining sort of small market teams in the NHL, and they just don't get the pub or the run that a lot of the larger market or even more successful teams do. So it's a challenge for them. But, you know, Nashville, we've seen the unraveling of the Nashville Predators over the last two or three years. And you could see like a stuffed animal with the thread sort of coming out. You could see that if you pull on it, it was going to fall apart. And it's going to be very interesting to see where they go from here, because they have, you know, in the general manager who's had a long, long run, been very successful, many sort of mild up and downs in that organization. They've been fairly consistent. They've been a middle of the pack team, though, outside of that one extended playoff run, largely a middle of the pack team. That they're good enough to get into the playoffs, but were really never great enough to win a Stanley Cup. And it's going to be interesting to see where they go from here. Cap concerns would always be there, more from a cash perspective for a team like that, a mid-market team. And the Dallas Stars, we just have to wait for them to play enough games to really find out who they are. They looked really good in the playoff bubble last year, but you know, that was then and this is now. So they need to play more games before we start to assess where things stand with the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I got to get deeper into the season, especially Dallas with those unplayed games on the docket so far. Finally, John, maybe give us a quick thought on the Canadian division to date, with the Canadians trailing the Leafs 4-2 in Montreal tonight. Toronto is starting to open up a pretty nice lead, but a lot of people feel that the Canadian division, at least for those of us here, you know, north of the border, is not as good as maybe people thought it was going to be overall. I know it's hard to compare the divisions because everybody is playing in their own division, but what's your assessment of the teams in Canada?
Well, you know, Toronto was one of the early favorites to win the Stanley Cup this year, so that sort of sours many people outside of Toronto. It's a big deal in Toronto, but, you know, Toronto is that team that people either love or they love to hate. So that creates some angst already within the division. And Montreal sort of came out of nowhere to have a nice run last year. And Carey Price has been able to show that he's not finished by any stretch of the imagination. I picked him as the Vezina winner in the preseason predictions for this season. And Winnipeg's trying to sort things out. Edmonton, you know, they just continue to be Edmonton. They're there. I mean, you talked earlier about Pittsburgh and what happens with Malkin and Crosby and those guys. But, you know, what about Edmonton? I mean, poor Edmonton. They win the draft lottery all those years. They have a lot of talent all offensively. They haven't really been able to sort out their defense. They hire an outstanding coach. They've hired a few outstanding coaches, actually. And just, you know, are they wasting Connor McDavid? Is, I think, a valid question. He's still early in his career and he has a long run, but they just don't seem to have as much, if you will, as a team like Toronto. So, at the same time, we always have to remember that the hockey media is centered in Toronto as well. So the North Division is going to continue to get a lot of hype around the world of hockey, whether you're talking about social media or publications and whatnot. And it's kind of being jammed down the throat of, I think, hockey fans. And so there is a little bit of a revolt that's taking place. The early excitement about the North Division seems to be wearing off very, very quickly, at least south of the border.